Over to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, we're going to go into a new parable. Where last week we looked at the, or finished up looking at the five foolish virgins and the five wise virgins, and we learned from that. And today we're going to look at the parable of the talents, beginning in verse 14. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave five talents, and to another two, and to another one, to every man according to his several ability. And straightway he took his journey. And he that received five talents went and traded with the same, and made them other five talents. And likewise he that received two, he also gained other two. But he that received one went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had given five talents came and brought the other five talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me five talents. Behold, I have gained beside them five talents more. And his Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. He that had received two talents came and said, Lord, thou hast delivered unto me two talents. Behold, I have gained two other talents beside. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. Then he which had received one talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee, that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. We're not going to read the remainder of the parable. We'll get to that next time we're together. But this is something that you find time and time again throughout the Bible, is God urging, or God's word urging us to make the most of our opportunities, to while there's time, to do what needs to be done. In Ecclesiastes chapter 6, Solomon says, In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thy hand. In other words, get it done. Isaiah says over in Isaiah 55 and verse 6, he says, Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. So Isaiah is saying the same thing. Jesus said over in John chapter 12, verse 35, says, where is it? Okay. And Jesus said, Yet a little while is the light with you. Walk ye while ye have light, lest darkness come upon you. And one more, we'll just move on, and I'll get this other one in just a few moments. But those are just a few examples of the Bible's admonition to act while there is time, to do what you know to do right now while you can. And when it comes to the parable of the talents, Jesus is teaching the foolishness of wasted opportunity. And he emphasizes the importance of being active while we wait on his return. Of course, this parable is a picture of that. While he's away, after his ascension into heaven, we know that's where he is now, until he'll return someday. And while we're waiting that return, we should be active pursuing his kingdom. Now, being active pursuing the things of this world and what it has to offer, that's not what he wants from us. But rather, he wants us to be about his business, diligently serving and investing in his kingdom, and that's what he's looking for in you and I. And though Jesus wants us to anticipate his return, and he does want us to be watchful and he wants us to be alert, he does not want us to sit idle and just stare at the eastern sky waiting, okay? That's not at all what he wants. If you read the book of 2 Thessalonians, you'll discover that the church there at Thessalonica kind of fell into that trap. At least some of them did, because if you read chapter 3, it talks about they thought his return was so imminent and so immediate, which they had no way of knowing, that they just were sitting idle just kind of hunkered down, so to speak. And according to chapter 3 and verse 11, that resulted in them, in their idleness, becoming busybodies. Idle hands is the devil's workshop, as they say. Because they were waiting, doing nothing, that idle time turned into gossip and busybody activity. Okay, so the Apostle Paul admonished them in verse 12 of that chapter. He says, "Now them that are such, we command and exhort by the Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread." In other words, get after it. You don't sit around waiting on the Lord. Get out there and do your job. Do the things that you need to be doing. That's what the Apostle Paul ran into. The Apostle Peter ran into the opposite problem at one point during his ministry work. There were believers that were so convinced that the Lord's return would not be soon that they began to live loosely. They began to just kind of flippantly go through life. And Peter quickly reminded them that that was the approach of the foolish people back in Noah's day, okay? They said, yeah, we've heard it before. There's going to be a flood. It's going to wash us away. And they kind of mockingly did their own thing. And, of course, we know what the results were, okay? They waited till it was too late, and it was too late. So there's a balance in the two. Obviously, we need to be alert, watching, but we also need to be busy. We should be anticipating the Lord's return, but we can't be so heavenly minded that we're no earthly good, but rather it's a time to be diligent, be doing good works for the kingdom, and that's what this parable is talking about. So we're going to dive into verse 14. He says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling to a far country, who called his own servants and delivered them his goods." So the man Jesus mentions here, he's leaving town. He's going to a far country. How far, we don't know, but it says far, so it's not local. And how long he's going to be gone, the Bible doesn't tell us that either, but it seems that it's going to be a lengthy stay. Wherever he's going, he's going to be absent for a while because he's making these arrangements for his business to be attended to and for his estate to be managed while he's away. If it were a brief absence, he probably would not make that kind of effort. He'd probably just tell his servants, "Hey, hold down the fort. I'll be back shortly." But he didn't. So he's telling them, each one, putting into their care certain things. He's getting everything in order by telling his servants what he wants and giving them a certain amount of resources to carry that out. The word servant here comes from the Greek word doulos, and it's just a general term that covers any level of servants. Okay, it could be speaking of a common laborer or a skilled craftsman. It's just kind of general term. But we also need to understand that this man was not; these were not hired servants, but rather he owned each of these servants. They were his. They were his property. Based on the fact that later on in the parable, it becomes very clear when he deals with the unprofitable servant, because what's he do? That servant's at his disposal, so he has him cast into outer darkness, which essentially is a death sentence, okay? On top of that, we find in verse 14, it says, a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants, okay? So all three of these servants were his personal property. And it's very likely that these three servants, again, it's a parable, but in the story, it's very likely that those servants are somewhat elevated in their position. In some way in this man's household, they had greater responsibility. It's very, very likely it's not uncommon at all in ancient cultures for them to, for wealthy people to have servants that were almost at all levels. Some were worthy and responsible enough to be overseers and managers. They would even, in some cases, manage the owner's finances and his business dealings and these sort of things. And some were very educated, some were very skilled. Some were very adept at management and these sort of things. And so those things, along with a proven track record, could put a servant in a very high position in any person's household. And they could be given responsibility even when the owner's there. They could be given great responsibility to manage the property even when he's around, because he just delegate to them, taking a load off himself, put them in charge, and have them, as long as they were responsible, he trusted them that they were going to take care of things, and they had his best interest in mind, and they were going to do what was honorable for his estate. And so that appears to be the case here in this parable with these three servants. He was confident in them enough that he was going to leave at least some portion of his business in their care. Now, this is a lot of detail. It's probably boring, but we're leading into what Jesus is trying to teach us in this parable. So while he's away, each one is given a certain amount of responsibility. It varies in degrees. One was given 5 talents, one was given 2 talents, and one was given 1 talent. And notice verse 15, he says, unto one 5 talents, another 2, another 1, to every man according to his several ability. And straightway he took his journey. That word several, we could substitute that word with the word personal and be very safe in doing so. Every one according to his personal ability is exactly what that means. So each one was given on a case-by-case basis. The owner is very fair, and he knows his servants, and so obviously he's going to go to a far country. He knows which ones that can handle the most and which ones could handle little, and he gives his talents out accordingly. Now, this man going into the far country, again, is a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ while he is away and while he tarries and while he has not returned to the earth. He's in, essentially, the far country is a picture of the Lord being in heaven until his return. It's something that we have to understand about the fairness of the Lord that we see here in this parable. He doesn't expect the same thing out of all of us in the sense of specifics, okay? Now, obviously, he expects effort and diligence and faithfulness and these out of all of us. But as far as specifics go, as far as things that are measurable in production, it varies from person to person. There are some people, some individuals that are far more talented than other individuals. David's got more talent in his little finger as far as his mind and music and things than I do myself, okay? And so God's expectation in those areas are greater for him than they would be me, okay? I wouldn't lead a very good choir, and God knows it, so he don't expect that of me. But then there are some in life that are a little more simple. Not quite as intelligent, perhaps, or they're less talented in certain areas. So the Lord is not expecting their service to achieve as much as that talented person's service. He just expects the faithfulness and the effort, okay? We have people in this church that are limited because of age, because of health issues, because of things that just have slowed them down. But they're just as faithful, just as diligent, just as willing as everybody that is healthy. And when I would begin to call names, but I won't. But we've got a plenty of them. They're still going at it as best they can. They can't get around good, but they get around, and because they choose to. And that's what the Lord expects. And so these were each given different amounts just to illustrate that there are various ranges of responsibility in God's kingdom. The man knew his servants well. He knew he could delegate to them according to his own experience, their own trustworthiness. And so that's how he gave out his talents. Now, the word talent is in this parable, it's just a reference to money, okay? He's handing out money. Not giving money, but he's putting money into their care. The word talent in a literal sense is the title of a measurement of weight. Okay, we have ounces, pounds, and tons, things like that. Well, that was a measure of weight. A talent was a measure of weight. Now, a specific coin, the value of a specific coin was not determined by its weight as much as it was determined by what it was made up of. Okay, if you had a talent of gold and a talent of silver, we know which one's going to be the most valuable, right? It's the gold, because of the composition. It's made of something more precious, but they both weigh the same amount, a talent, okay? Bronze or brass talent would be worth even less than the silver, and on you go. But whatever the composition of the coin may be, it still only weighs the same talent as another coin of more value or less value, okay? So in this case, the parable doesn't specify that the talents were made, what they were made of. What they were composed of. It doesn't say he gave out five silver talents and two talents of silver and one talent of silver or gold or any of those other things. He just says a talent. So we have to expect, in fairness, that it's, each one of them is likely given the same type coin, whether it be gold, silver, or otherwise, but they've each been given different weights. Obviously, five talents has more value than three talents of the same precious metal. So based upon personal ability, again, any number of things could come into play. Their ability, their intellect, their experience, their training perhaps, even their age could be a factor on how many talents he gave them. Obviously, if he had a teenage servant, he's less likely to leave them with a great amount of responsibility as he would a seasoned, mature servant. Okay, just because that's just smart. Okay, and so the next time we're together, we're going to look closely at what each one of these did with their talents, okay? And that's the lesson we're going to learn. But let me just close with this challenge for you to be encouraged by the fairness of the Lord. While he tarries his return, while he delays, he doesn't expect any more out of you or I than we can produce. He doesn't ask me to give him something that I'm unable and incapable of doing. He doesn't ask of me something that I don't have the talent level to produce. He just don't do that. But he expects my commitment. He expects my diligence. He expects my faithfulness. And he expects my sincerity. Now, the sincerity, what's the importance of that? Because if we're doing it for the right reason, that's what makes a difference with the Lord. If you and I have all the productivity in the world, but we are doing it for the wrong reason, we're doing it for the recognition of men, or we're doing it for some sort of personal gain, then it's all for naught. He's looking for our sincerity. He's looking for us to have the right motivation to serve him, there again, coupled with faithfulness and diligence and commitment and these sort of things. So we don't have to worry about the measurement of what we do as far as comparing to those around us, as long as we're given 100% effort. That's what he's looking for. And when we get a little bit further through the parable, we're going to see that the two responsible servants, even though one had produced five and the other had produced two talents, still they both had the same exact commendation from the man when he returned from the far country. He says, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Said the same thing to both of them. He didn't say to one of them, "Well done, thou best servant." Or he didn't say to the other one, "Well done, you know, mediocre servant." He says, "Well done, thou good and faithful." Now, good it's pretty self-explanatory. Faithful meaning that they were committed to doing what it took to take care of their owner's business. Where you and I show ourselves to be faithful is when we're taking care of Jesus's business. You come into the house of God, you're being faithful. You tithe and give your tithes and offering, you're giving, being faithful. When you're witnessing, you're being faithful. On and on and on that it goes. That's where faithfulness is, okay? So the rebuke that he gives to the unfaithful servant is pretty sobering, because he essentially says, you wasted my time, you've wasted what I've given to you, and consequently he condemns him. So that's not what we want. We'll learn more about it the next time we're together, and I appreciate you guys, and we will stand and be dismissed in a word of prayer, and look forward to seeing you Sunday. Guys, invite somebody and be faithful to the house of God. We've come off a great summer. Now school has started back, and this is usually the best time of the year as far as church activity and enthusiasm and attendance. And so it ought to be real good coming off a good summer, okay? All right, Chad, will you lead us in prayer, please?